Meeting to order, the House Oil and Gas Committee. This is Thursday, the 28th of April of '05. It's 5:12 p.m. Got with us Representatives Cartula, Gardner, Brokberg, Sanders, and myself, Jared Coring. We've got three items to take up during today's meeting. Two pieces of legislation, House Bill 286, House Bill 254. And then we got the confirmation for Kathy Forrester, who's the governor's nominee for the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. Wanted to announce that previously we had scheduled two other pieces of legislation that will not be heard. HB 234, which was the interest rate legislation, that was a bill that I had filed several weeks ago, that we're going to most likely just hold over for the interim and do some further work on that. HCR 8, which was the SIGS resolution, we're going to indefinitely hold that one off, probably permanently, because we've got a preliminary decision by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. We've made a copy of that. It just arrived in our office about an hour ago, so you guys have a copy of that in front of you just for your perusal when you get a chance. I'm not going to attempt to analyze it for it because I haven't had a chance to look at it, even though I've been told roughly what it means, but I just assume I'll have you guys look at it. And if we have the gal's name that joins us, Kate Girard, at any point in time, she is online, I understand, and we'll have her explain to us. As a matter of fact, perhaps we'll just do that right now just to get that out of the way. So Kate Girard from the Regulatory Commission, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am. Thank you.
Just give us a synopsis as to what that preliminary decision is.
Yes, and we just filed a letter with your staff, so they'll bring that around. And what I'll do for you is I'll read you what I think are the relevant parts of the letter. Mm-hmm. In response to a complaint filed by AgRAM on October 1, 2004, we initiated a process to look at whether this pipeline called the Cook Inlet Gas Gathering System, or SIGS, is in violation of two of our statutes, AS 4205, which is the Alaska Public Utilities Regulatory Act, and AS 4206, the Pipeline Act. We went through a pleading process, which was completed in late March, and the RCA ordered, in its order that was just issued, which is also in your hands, that in fact we decided the Unocal Alaska and Marathon, as owners of SIGS, our public utilities under 4205 and do qualify for our regulation of that pipeline under 4205. We then immediately exempted Unocal Alaska and Marathon from our regulation under the 4205 while the parties complete the pleading cycle on the remaining questions. And we explain why we do this in the last three pages of the order. So my recommendation to the members, knowing that you're very busy, unless you're very interested in reading the 21-page order, I would really focus my attention on the last three pages, starting on, I think, line 5 on, I think it's page 18. That'll kind of give you a summary and essence of why we regulated it and then decided to hold off exercising our jurisdictional rights until the pleading cycle is complete. And we did that so that parties have an opportunity to finish the pleading cycle and we get a little bit more information in. We also issued another order today, which schedules a pre-hearing conference with the parties. That means that the parties come before us and we talk with them about certain things, and we instructed them to be prepared to discuss a recommendation for consolidating that pleading schedule, which we laid out, back in March, and also to prepare to discuss a settlement procedure for this docket. So that's where we are. We're calling that pre-hearing conference on May 4th, and I suspect that good things will come of it.
Great. Thank you very much. Are there any questions from the committee members on the report for, I misplaced her name, Kate Girard? Any questions for Kate Girard? We'll move on to the next item. And again, we're going to accept that testimony, her report, in lieu of the resolution that was intended to encourage a more expeditious review of that situation and a subsequent report. But since we have it, there's no point in continuing with the with the resolution. Okay, so we'll now go to the confirmation hearing for Kathy Forrester of the Alaska Regulatory – nope, excuse me, that's the other alphabet agency – Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. There we go. Kathy Forrester, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Okay. What I'd like to do is just have you give us a presentation, talk about your background, why you have an interest in this job, what your goals, aspirations are, and then we can just open it up for some questions and and move on.
Okay, sounds good. For the record, my name is Kathy Forrester. And first, I would like to thank you all for taking time in your busy schedules this evening to consider me for this appointment.
I listen to this broadcast.
I was raised to give more than I get. Alaska has given so much to me and to my family that I'm grateful to have this chance to give something back. My training and experience as a petroleum engineer make this position in the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission seem to be the ideal place for me to serve the state of Alaska. I've had a variety of engineering assignments from reservoir development to facility design. I've also had opportunities to supervise and manage broad groups of people, from small, highly technical groups of engineers and scientists to large operations groups of mainly skilled and unskilled laborers. Most of my early experience was onshore Texas and offshore Louisiana, but for the last 13 years, I have worked the North Slope of Alaska, from well operations at Prudhoe Bay to new field developments on the western North Slope. I'm particularly proud of a few of my Alaska work experiences and would like to share them with you. When I first came to Alaska, I was operations superintendent for the Prudhoe Bay Wells Group during the time when that group helped to pioneer coiled tubing drilling in Alaska. Now, I was not one of the brilliant technical people doing this groundbreaking work. I was merely an enabler for them. Later, I had the privilege of leading the strategic business review team that initiated the WESAC development that Alaska is enjoying today. And more recently, I was part of the consulting team that prepared an analysis for the Department of Natural Resources on how to assist new operators in acquiring access to North Slope facilities. Throughout my career, I've been blessed with wonderful opportunities to learn and contribute at the same time, and I see this appointment as another such opportunity. I'm especially pleased and honored to have the opportunity to serve the people of Alaska as part of such a well-respected commission, and in concert with such intelligent, honest, ethical, and hardworking gentlemen as my co-commissioners, Dan Seamount and John Norman. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from the committee members for Kathy? Kathy, what do you see as your role there at the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission?
Well, primarily, my role will be to serve the people of Alaska in the four prongs of our mission statement. Prevent waste of hydrocarbons, encourage the operators to maximize recovery of hydrocarbons, to protect the groundwater, and to protect owners' correlative rights. It's been a while since there's been a reservoir engineer in the engineering commissioner position, so I see that I'll have the opportunity to bring a reservoir engineering perspective to the post. And I think this is a very important thing at a time when one of our biggest issues is going to be around setting a rate for gas withdrawal when we get a gas pipeline and decide to blow down the gas cap at Prudhoe Bay. That's really a reservoir engineering set of issues.
Okay. I see your role there as basically a steward of the state's resources. You are just one of three people who have an incredibly important position to make sure that we're getting our monetary share, I guess you could say, our royalties and so forth, and that everything's being reported correctly and properly. Do you foresee any challenges with that?
I consider the position to be a challenging one, but I think I'm qualified to do the job. I think I have the honesty and the ethics to do it properly, and the experience and the intelligence to do it right.
Just wanted to note for the record that her resume is amongst us here, and my own personal opinion is it's a very substantial record here, having been in the industry for about 30 years now, and as you see, as far as I can tell, seems eminently qualified. Any other comments, questions, input from the committee?
I have no reservations.
Okay. Would there be a motion to refer Kathy P. Forrester to, yes, ma'am?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to make the motion to move Kathy Forrester's name from this committee to the floor for consideration
to the full body.
Okay.
Okay.
Representative Roper.
Just to elucidate on that, any assignment of the recommendation doesn't imply approval or disapproval by the committee.
Right.
We should point that out.
Right. We're not voting in the affirmative or negative here on this this motion here. It's just simply to forward your name and basically just recommend you, I suppose, as a full committee here by virtue of doing so to the full body, both the House and Senate, when we have our confirmations, which is, I believe, on the 5th of May, if I remember the date correctly. So since there's no objection to forward her name forward, we'll just consider that done. Congratulations, Kathy. We look forward to taking your name for consideration with the full body in several days from now.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good talking to you.
You too.
For the members of the committee, I have a sheet here to have you sign and circulate. Okay, we'll move next to, just to dispense with business as quick as you can here, move to House Bill 286, which is by Representative Roper. Turn it over to the representative. 254, excuse me. Representative Roper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will briefly do this. Mr. Chairman, this legislation creates the statutory authority for the Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority to use monies appropriated from the Rail Belt Energy Fund to initiate and continue the preliminary engineering design and construction of a gas transmission pipeline or spur line for delivering gas from the principal North Slope natural gas pipeline to South Central Alaska gas grid system. What this bill does is somewhat different. It clarifies the project definition and expands the ANGDA scope of work to include a spur line route adjacent to the park's highway to South Central from an appropriate northern point of the main gas line. So if we build the main gas line, we could look elsewhere rather than Glen Allen. It also, Mr. Chairman, provides that another route, a direct or so-called bullet line, all the way from Prudhoe Bay to South Central could be undertaken and looked at by the authority. It also keeps and reiterates the spur line from Glen Allen to South Central and the primary pipeline from Prudhoe Bay to Valdez gas pipeline. So it doesn't diminish any of its authority. It actually just expands it in two ways to clarify that they can look at the park, so-called Parks Highway route as a spur and then a straight bullet line. Additionally, Mr. Chairman, in section 2, I would point out that subsection C on page 3, that there are provisions here. The authority shall include provisions to implement cost recovery of costs methodologies for the expenditure of the fund that's included in a companion bill of some $8 million from the private sector, and also on subsection D on page 3, will agree to cooperate with federal grantees. When working on this bill, it came to my attention, Mr. Chairman, that through the offices of Senator Ted Stevens, that a consortium of the Cook County Tribal Council and a subsidiary of NSTAR Natural Gas Company have been granted $3 million to work on the Parks Highway route that a lot of people weren't really aware of. So what D does is recognize that there may be some activity on that particular spur line, and with ANGDA now working and looking at permitting the Glen Allen Mat-Su Valley gas distribution hookup, but there's already work underway. So this language is intended to have cooperation so there can be a trading of material, and we don't want to duplicate these precious dollars for planning. So, but the main difference here is it actually, I think, recognizes that we ought to start looking at a bullet line in terms of our long-range future and this other routing so we don't get locked into just one system. So if we don't get a line that goes all the way to Valdez, we have alternatives, albeit there's certainly been conversations about even if the highway route were the primary transportation route, you might want to come through Glen Allen given cost, but until we do this type of work, we don't know. Mm-hmm. That's why it's appropriate. With that, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the committee's support. I'm not sure that Mr. Hines has been trying to stay up with us for testimony, and we do. Your bill packet does have a letter from Governor Hickel.
Okay. Yeah, I did see that. Thank you very much, Representative Roakberg. Are there any questions from the committee for the representative?
I have a quick question. There's a fund that Chugach Electric has been talking about using for other projects. Is that the Rail Belt Energy Fund, do you know?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gardner, there are right now two fund sources. One is the so-called Rail Belt Energy Fund. It's the balance. It's worth some $28 million.
Uh-huh.
It's a refunded portion of a electrical grid line that was planned to go from Glen Allen into the Sutton area, I believe. Uh-huh. And it didn't work out, and the money was refunded or reappropriated back into the Rail Belt Energy Fund. There's additionally another pot of money, if you will, it's in the eight and under ADA, of $40 million, which was the interest earned on monies that was appropriated through the legislature in ADA for what was called the new Southern Intertie Route, which was a direct electrical transmission line between Anchorage and the Kenai Peninsula. Mm-hmm. That was ultimately decided that that project would not go forward. So there is approximately $68 million, if you will, available in designated money sources. And what I did to avoid the intramural utility wars uh-huh. between competing interests was just focus the thrust of my bill and its companion bill on the $28 million. The companion appropriation bill provides $8 million for the gas line spur study and a cumulative $20 million to the City of Seward, Homer Electric Association, and Chugach Electric to upgrade the old existing Southern Intertie and increase the repair and maintenance on that line. I believe there was significant deferred maintenance when they were talking about doing this other route.
Uh-huh.
And there is some some controversy about whether or not they should do that. My opinion is I think it's appropriate for the legislature to appropriate this money because it removes that cost from the ratepayer's base. The utility could go out and bond this money or borrow it, and then turn around and increase the cost to the rate to our constituents. This money's been sitting here for a long time. We've been talking about the Northern Intertie. Fairbanks got their money. I mean, the rail belt in the southern section hasn't really received good benefit for the balance of that money. And I'd like to see that those monies used for that purpose, take it off, frankly, to spend them before somebody else spends them, and leave the $40 million out there for the intramural war between the utilities. So I'm trying to do a couple of good things here. Direct the money, I think, appropriately, and avoid the intramural war. It's kind of like throwing scraps of food out to a dog cake, you know. So, mm-hmm. I hope that answers your question, Representative Gardner.
Mm-hmm. Any more questions for the sponsor before we move to our public hearing phase? Seeing none, we'll open up the public hearing and go to our first individual on House Bill 254, and that would be Jerry McCutcheon. Jerry? Jerry online? Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Jerry.
All right. First, just because you see lots of activity on the gas line, you should not assume it's for real or that they are actually trying to secure gas or a gas line. They make money churning. The cost of churning plus profit is then stuck in the gas consumer's bill as if it were real. It is only the illusion of the pursuit of a gas and a gas line that counts. For example, a recent full-page ad by the Alaska Gas Port Authority offering to purchase 4 billion cubic feet of gas a day. The money is the ads comes from a lower 48 gas company, Sempra Energy, who will stick to their gas companies with the costs. I'll take all the cost they can, plus profit. Sempra will probably charge off $25 million to $50 million before they are done. It is the illusion and your gullibility that counts, not reality. The oil companies are doing the same thing to their customers. It's a game they play. you as a taxpayer are being stuck with the state costs of this charade by Murkowski. Back in the late 70s and early 80s, the gas promoters stuck the South 48 gas bill payers with over $1 billion in costs. That's so much for the ads. Mr. Chairman, HB 254, whatever reason there was for ANGDA, ANGDA has been eclipsed when the Port Authority acquired the rights to Yukon Pacific's right-of-way permits. And more importantly, when NSTAR went public with NSTAR's gas line studies, the operation of ANGDA has at best been a study in sophistry. Mr. Hines has gone around the state espousing wildly optimistic sophic statements that the public is desperate to hear and have been led to believe are possible. There is no longer a reason to fund ANGDA, for there is nothing ANGDA can do that private enterprise cannot do better at substantially less cost, but also more realistically, a private enterprise without state funds. Every route that ANGDA may wish to study, NSTAR has already studied or is studying. NSTAR has most of the answers. ANGDA has confusion, sophistry, and waste. The most important thing is NSTAR cannot rely on anything that ANGDA does. It has to do it for itself. It's got its whole system at stake. I have listened to Mr. Hines peddle his sophistry for hours at ANGDA's board meetings for meeting after meeting. There is nothing that ANGDA can do that NSTAR can't do. And it is better doing it than is ANGDA, and does it without state funds. ANGDA is just duplicating NSTAR. NSTAR must do its own studies. NSTAR's whole investment is in Alaska's at stake. And NSTAR cannot and will not rely on somebody else's studies, least of all ANGDA's. It is time to let the ANGDA die in committee. If Murkowski wants to fund ANGDA out of his budget, that is his call, but not a wise one. It is not one the legislature should aid and abet. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to thank you for allowing the public to testify.
You're quite welcome, sir. Thank you for your testimony. We'll move on to the next person on my list, which would be, I'm going to mispronounce your name, Warren, but looks like Q. K-E-O-G-H, Warren Q. I'm Chickle.
Yes, my name is Warren Keogh, K-E-O-G-H. My address is P.O. Box 1166, Chickaloon, Alaska, and I represent no one other than myself and my immediate family. And thanks for the opportunity to testify.
You're welcome.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you loud and clear, sir. Go ahead.
Thank you. I would voice my reservations with House Bill 254 that further defines the ANGDA project, but especially to the use of money appropriated from the Rail Belt Energy Fund, particularly the $8 million earmarked for ANGDA in the companion bill, House Bill 253. And my concerns come about in part because it's my feeling that ANGDA has moved too quickly in its preliminary planning work for the so-called spur line from Glen Allen to Palmer, and ANGDA has rather rapidly expended, I think, from what I've been able to determine, about $300,000 to $500,000 for preliminary engineering, environmental, financial, public outreach, and other efforts in the past 5 or 6 months. And things have moved a bit too quickly, in my estimation, and as a result, some mistakes have been made in the pipeline routing and also in the ANGDA right-of-way application to DNR that was submitted here just a couple of weeks ago. And I'll just give three quick examples if I could. And the first would be an issue of public process. The ANGDA board meeting April 4th was not properly noticed. Public notice appeared in an obscure Department of Revenue webpage on late Friday morning for a 10 a.m. ANGDA meeting the following Monday. Public notices did not appear in print in the newspapers till Monday morning of the meeting day. Another example of public outreach, this is about a 150-mile-long pipeline. the terminus of which goes through numerous parcels of private property in the city of Palmer. Those of us in Chicoloon who have recently become aware of the pipeline routed through our community, I took it upon myself to call numerous people, private homeowners and property owners in Palmer area. The pipeline, in case you're not aware, is routed to end in the vicinity of a gravel pit where the trunk highway hits the Parks Highway. So I called some folks along the trunk road and places further up the line, approximately a dozen this past Sunday afternoon, and not a single person, with the possible exception of one person, was not aware that the pipeline was planned or routed through their private property. And I suggest, with a project of this magnitude, where the an application has already been submitted, that people should be better informed. One last example, and that is in my community of Chicoloon, we were not apprised, that I'm aware of, as a community, of this pipeline being routed through our property along a proposed route until rather late in the stage, when the route had already been determined without our input or advice. As a result of that, last night the Chicoloon Community Council, after approximately 20 or more citizens have worked on a resolution for the past 2 weeks, we passed a resolution which the community council will deliver to ANGDA here in the next couple of days. But basically, it's a resolution stating generally that we support the efforts of ANGDA to bring North Slope gas to South Central Alaska, but request further study of other routes and its impacts. And it's about a two-page statement, but essentially our community respectfully requests that ANGDA suspend their permit and right-of-way acquisition process until all routes from the Alaska North Slope to South Central have been thoroughly assessed for their suitability and their economic, social, and environmental impacts, and that the public process for this project include proper notice and sufficient time for meaningful comments from the Chicoloon Community Council. And so I have concerns, and I hope that you consider, as you ponder changing the statutes, the ANGDA statutes, that that if further funding to ANGDA is warranted, or if it is, that that we make ANGDA accountable for what they do and they don't do. And I guess this testimony comes about as a result of in my view, is a rather hurried efforts of ANGDA to acquire the pipeline right away. I guess that's all I have to say. Thanks. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We have a question from Representative Roker.
Yes, sir. You're aware that bill actually should be consistent with the Chicoloon Community Council's goal of looking at other routes. Are you aware of that?
Yes, I am.
Okay, thank you.
And before I go any further, and before I forget, I'd like to just note that, for the record, we have been joined by other members of the committee. Representative Dahlstrom arrived at about 5:10, and Representative McGuire at about 5:15. So appreciate your attendance. Thank you. Wanted to, before we go to Harold Hines, which I've been apprised is online wishing to testify on this legislation, I just wanted to ask that he give consideration to that testimony from Mr. Keough, as far as the noticing issues, the opportunity for the community to comment, and for any consideration of the community's concerns regarding this proposed gas line route. So, Mr. Hines, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify in very strong support and acknowledgement of House Bill 254. There are probably just two major points I'd like to make about the bill. And then I would like a little bit of a chance maybe to respond to the previous testimony. Two things. One, this bill is the bill that will facilitate the looking at what I consider to be a more direct route from the North Slope to the Cook Inlet area. Right now, our funding and our efforts and everything have been looked at from the point of view of tying into either a highway pipeline going down through Canada or a pipeline following a route to Valdez, Alaska, along the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System. And that's why we've focused on the Glen Allen to Palmer connection, because it was the missing link in terms of different ways that one might get gas to Cook Inlet. But it was done very clearly with the intention of fitting in with those projects on it. Representative Roekberg's bill represents an opportunity to expand that horizon. House Bill 254 very clearly is directed towards the other parts of those efforts to find a way down. Currently, we are aware that there is a proposal involving Cook Inlet, Tribal Council, NSTAR, and some other parties that is looking for federal funding to study that route. There have been some previous studies, but in terms of again, the spur line, we would believe that this would provide the kind of grub stake we would need to really look seriously at that route and bring it to a level of design and engineering and permitting and other things that would make it real. The other point I guess I just really wanted to make about the bill is that we view this funding as a grub stake. We believe that the Rail Belt Energy Fund provides that opportunity to get the project going. The project would be financed of itself at a much larger sum, and once it was financed, we would expect that it would generate revenue sufficient to pay back the fund very quickly. And that would be ANGDA's intent, is to pay this money back. We look at this as a loan, a grub stake, whatever you want to call it, for us. And just in brief comment as to the previous testimony, on the record, ANGDA started seriously both public notice and contracting processes related to this spur line last September. We were very open about it. As a matter of fact, we ran some ads in the Frontiersman and other local publications, full-page color ads indicating what we were doing and why we were doing it in terms of meeting the energy needs of South Central. At that time, then, in one of our first efforts, as we started our contractors around the first of this year, was to actually have an individual go out and do a certain amount of public outreach. At that time, the funds and the time were limited, but we did contact a few people in the Chicoloon area. Since then, I personally have gone up there, and I have spent time in both Sutton and Chicoloon. We had some good meetings at the Community Council, received some very good suggestions, and we've actually been able to incorporate a number of those suggestions into the application. The exact routing in the Chicoloon area is something that we will study further, just as several other places along the line. We will be studying further as we go through it. The application right now on the table is for state land only. It has nothing to do with the private land, and in particular in the Palmer area, we've felt that we would probably be using existing utility right-of-ways that have been granted there by both the state and the borough. Again, we've not addressed in any great detail, and the funding was not sufficient at this point to address in any great detail what we would do with the private contractors. There is additional funds in the supplemental budget to allow us to do those kind of efforts, and we look forward to, again, hopefully that being approved and moving on. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to answer any questions you have at this time.
Thank you very much. Any questions from the committee for Harold Hines? Representative Roekberg.
Just to clarify, Mr. Hines, thank you very much for your testimony. The supplemental budget that was vetoed by the governor, I mean, my indication is that you thought that would carry you through September. How far, assuming the money is budgeted in another bill, does that get you through next year, all of 06, or what?
Representative Roekberg, through the chair, the $2.17 million that was passed by the legislature in the fast-track supplemental and subsequently vetoed by the governor, it is my understanding that it is part of the sort of working amendments to the supplemental bill that is, I believe, in Senate finance right now. I don't know if the bill has been formally amended, but I did look the other day, and it is on the worksheet of amendments there. That $2.17 million is the sum of money to take this next step from once we receive a right-of-way to cross the state land, which is the dominant land position along the way. Then we move next to dealing with issues of very specific design in certain areas along the pipeline, acquiring right-of-way, doing permitting and other types of work like that that are necessary to basically put together the funding package for the project. And again, this will be a bonded type package as a utility company, and the $2 million gets us towards that next step. I'm not even going to say it gets us that whole bond package, but it gets us far enough towards that next step. We would be prepared to issue those contracts at a time that is fairly coincident with whatever contract or whatever agreement is made or reached on the North Slope project, whether it be down the highway or to Valdez. And the reason for that is we believe that it is wisest to do the spur line as a pre-build into the big project to cut the time delay in getting the critically needed gas to the Cook Inlet area. And so that's the schedule we've looked at. That is all that money does, and it, you know, very frankly, barely does that. That's cutting it pretty tight on a number of items in that budget. But that is entirely different from what we would see as the need for the broader issue of getting North Slope gas to Cook Inlet, if necessary, even by some direct route or some other route.
Further questions for Mr. Hines? Harold and I have something in common. His last name is my middle name. I know you hear that every time you testify, Harold, so thanks for bearing with me.
All right.
Okay. I'd like to, since there apparently is nobody else on teleconference, before I move on to testifiers here, if there are any, I'd like to ask if there is, in fact, anybody else online that wishes to address the Oil and Gas Committee on House Bill 286. Anybody else online? There I go again, 254. Thank you. Anybody online to address House Bill 254? Anybody in person here in June that wishes to address the committee on House Bill 254?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'll be brief. I'm Paul Foos. I'm the registered lobbyist for Backbone, citizen organization promoting gas land development in Alaska. I think you have a letter in your packet from our co-chairman, Wally Hickel. We consider this really important to maintain Alaska's options, all the options for bringing gas down. And while we support the bigger projects and hope that they go through, and especially we're very glad to see Sempra make an actual offer to buy the gas for the larger project, there's no guarantee that any of the big projects are going to move forward quickly. And I think we all know that. The other thing that's important about this from a strategic sense of bringing the gas to South Central Alaska is that we know the biggest battle is to secure a gas supply for the project. And there's been a lot of discussions about that lately, and the thing that the state might do to help make that happen, if in fact there is no willingness on the part of the producers to either produce the gas themselves or to sell it to anybody else. This project is proposed as a bullet line, as a 24-inch line, and could operate with the state's royalty gas from the North Slope. And it is critical that we bring the gas to South Central. Here's what's going to happen if we don't. For years, we enjoyed $2 per 1,000 cubic feet or per million BTU gas. Now we're up to 270 and rapidly climbing, and the projection is in 5 years we'll be to $5 gas. That's doubling the energy cost for South Central Alaska, which is Mat-Su, Anchorage, and Kenai. That's 80% of the state's population. In addition, the community like Fairbanks has never had gas but wants it. So At $5, our electrical and our fuel are going to go up. We're already about to lose the Agrium plant. The other thing you might not know is that without getting Alaska gas, we're going to lose the LNG plant in Kenai. And their presidential authorization to export only goes to 2009 because there's not enough gas to do export and domestic production. And the reason why it would go first is that LNG is not considered a manufactured product. You don't chemically change it. All you do is compress it and chill it. So any domestic use will trump it, and we will be able to use it here, and they'll have to shut that plant down. So these are very productive, value-added. One of the few examples of the holy grail we all seek is for value-added in Alaska. We're going to lose those if we don't do something. The other thing is that there's a lot of propane in that gas, and if we bring it down here, this is one of the potentials for us to ship propane to coastal and rural Alaska and provide some relief to high energy prices there. The last thing I want to say, I do think this is an appropriate use of the Rail Belt Energy Fund because the energy is critical both to the cost of living of people in South Central and to the competitiveness as a region, as a place for businesses to operate. I think the last thing I wanted to say is I think that Jerry McCutcheon might not have it right that NSTAR is not interested in this, because for this organization, for sure, I don't think there's any question that they will be a tax-exempt corporation. And that counts about 35% in federal taxes and net proceeds. That is a big tax break for the project. And those savings can be passed on to consumers and users of gas in South Central. So for those reasons, we support the bill and would hope you'd move it on to the next committee.
Thank you. Any questions for the testifier? Would these, were the proceeds from the Alaska Railroad bonds, if those were used, could they be, would this organization be eligible to use that money to build a gas line?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, they would, and that's a bill that I know that you worked on, mm-hmm. and those railroad bonds could be used for this. In addition, the federal guarantees could also be used for this project.
Paul was very instrumental in working with the Oil and Gas Committee 2 years ago to pass the legislation. I forgot the number. I think it was House Bill 40 that authorized the use of up to, I think it was $18 billion in low-interest rate tax-exempt bonds to the Alaska Railroad as a funding source to build the gas line, including spurs and other related facilities. So perhaps we'll be using that money in the near future. Representative Roper.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul, I appreciate your last comment. Could you work with Heather in my office? We have that USC site and whatever that is about the federal guarantee. I'll
yes,
follow
sir.
Up on that.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there anybody else in Juneau that wishes to testify? Merle, your nice chance. Okay. Anybody? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing. Any further comments from the committee in regard to House Bill 254, Representative Cotrilla?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair to Representative Roekberg, Commissioner Hines mentioned it was going to be a loan, but is that the way the bill's really structured? I didn't see the appropriations bill, so I just...
Good question.
Hey, Mr. Chair, it's
yes, Representative Roekberg.
Representative Beth.
It's a joke. It's okay.
Anyway, the... Stop it. If you look at page 3 again on subsection C, the first sentence there, it's telling food provisions to implement recovery of cost methods. So it's actually an appropriation, but the idea is, and what Mr. Hines is talking about, grub staking is a very good, great short title here, is to actually look and seek to see if we can get the recovery of those costs, pay it back to the Rail Belt Energy Fund from the private sector. You know, when they integrate that, or from the project that may be a standalone. So this is, the idea here is to get the preliminary work done in a more timely manner, mm-hmm. and seek to form an organization, either from privately or, as Mr. Fu says, some type of authority which can take advantage of the taxes mm-hmm. and funding, perhaps, but it be a project entity from which this group could recover the funding. So that's the intent there. I thought it's kind of artful, as a matter of fact. If I don't mind saying so myself.
Good job. That was artful, all right.
Thank you, Representative Cartula. Cartula. Yeah. For asking the question.
And thank you, Representative Norm. Any more comments from the committee? Any more questions? What is the will of the committee? Anybody have an interest in submitting a motion to move this bill out of committee?
Yes, I do.
Well, we're going to have to flip for it. We've got two hands that went up at the same time. Representative, I'll choose here, McGuire.
Oh, well, good.
She's the prettier of the two.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move that we move House Bill number 254 out of committee with individual recommendations and attached, hopefully, savings for South Central fiscal notes.
Okay, we got a motion to move this bill out of committee with individual recommendations accompanied fiscal notes. Any objection to that motion? Representative Cotulli?
No objection. I just have to say one thing. Ramona, forgive us.
No. Ramona would approve.
You've talked to her.
Mm-hmm. Would be proud. Absolutely.
Okay, the motion has moved out of committee. So we'll next move to the next legislation, which is by Representative Samuels, and that would be House Bill 286. I got my number right this time. And on behalf of Samuels, we'll have his staff aide present the legislation.
Yes.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Name for the record, if you would.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Sarah Nielsen, staff to Representative Samuels. House Bill 286 is a simple housekeeping bill that was brought forward by Municipal Light and Power. This bill amends current statute by adding language that allows the Department of Natural Resources to use the gas transfer price set by the RCA, much like DNR uses the contract price for gas. The transfer price is the rate that MLNP is required to charge itself for the Beluga field gas that it uses. DNR agreed to let MLNP to continue to use the current statute based on the MLNP Shell contract even after MLNP bought Shell's interest in the field, but that contract expires at the end of this year. While MLNP's share in the Beluga River field will assure MLNP of a supply of gas, without this legislation, MLNP will be unable to continue to use current statute for its gas. The proposed change is consistent with the purpose of the original law and also will help ensure that Anchorage Electric consumers have certainty and stability in their electric rates. And that's about it. I know there are people online also for questions.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions on the committee members? You're getting off easy. We'll see the hands going up. Good job. Thank you very much. Okay, I'd like to go into the testimony phase of this. The first one from teleconference would be Mr. Posey, Jim Posey from MLNP. Are you online, sir? Jim Posey? Jim, either take your machine off of the mute or we'll move on to the next person. We'll come back to you. Jim, are you there? How about Andy Lehman of MLNP? Andy? Okay. If you guys can hear us, we cannot hear you.
This goes to resources next, right?
I don't know what the next committee referral is on this.
No,
is it?
Traded.
Oh, that's right. It's going to go to finance.
Yeah, so
Mr. Lehman, if you can hear us, we cannot hear you. So fix your equipment and...
Again, testing, 1, 2, 3.
There we go.
Mr. Posey is here.
Okay. And is that Mr.
Lehman? Actually, good evening to the chairman and representatives.
Mr. Lehman there as well?
Mr. Lehman's here as well.
Good. Well, we got you on the list first, Jim, so go ahead and offer your testimony.
I just would like to second basically what staff said. This is a housekeeping legislation that we discovered that we need to do something in order to make sure that the RCA and the Department of Natural Resources regulations, we have a method to sort through the two of them on how to set price for the royalty. And all this does, it sets up RCA as being first, and if that's deemed to be unreasonably low, then the DNR steps in and helps set that royalty rate. And we don't think we'll ever have to use it. But looking at the situation we were in, we were not covered.
Thank you very much. Any questions for the testifier? Jim, thanks for your testimony. I do appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman.
We have a question from Representative Roachberg.
How do you set the price? I'm not sure I understand that.
The question is, how do we set price? Actually, the RCA sets the price that the transfer price that we use, and that's based on the interest payments that we have to make for the $120-some million we use to buy the field. So it is a price set by the RCA that allows us to sell it to ourselves and have a reasonable rate without having harm to our ratepayers.
You okay?
Pretty cheap.
Mr. Lehman. Andy Lehman.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Andy Lehman with Kemple, Huffman & Ellis. We're regulatory counsel for MLNP, and really I'm just here to answer questions if there are any from the committee members.
Okay, appreciate that. So far we don't have any. At this point, we'll let you know. We'll move now to Mark Myers, Division of Oil and Gas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Mark Myers, Director of Division of Oil and Gas. And I also have with me Martin Schultz and Diane Colley, of both of our audit section, to answer any detailed technical questions. Basically, DNR supports this bill. It's recognized previously by the legislature that utilities need a stable price, and the under AS 3805-180AA, they don't have to use our higher of provision. They actually use the sales price in providing gas to their customers, and then the state gets that sales price, not the higher of value, which is an average of those received by other producers from the same producing area. So it provides a mechanism to provide a stable rate and base for royalty gas sold to public utilities, and it recognized the good of a public utility is in the best interest of the state. And so we have an unusual situation here where the public utility uses the gas is also the gas producer, and that's never been covered in our law before. So this amendment allows that affiliated producer and marketer, seller of the gas to use a simple value. And again, sometimes there can be concerns of affiliated transfers that they don't represent actual value. However, in this case, because you have an independent price setting agency by RCA, that provides sort of an independent review of that price to make sure it's not artificially low or unreasonable. So in this case, again, if DNR would disagree, they still could go back and challenge it, but in general, I think we would be satisfied with the RCA. So again, this is dealing with the issue of the shipper is the utility is also the producer of gas, and it's not an arm's length transaction, but we have a third party intervention here that to set the price. So we're very comfortable. This is well within the intent of what AA was supposed to do. Without any technical questions, we can turn it over to Martin Schultz or Diane Colley.
Okay. Well, we don't have any technical questions yet, but if we do, we'll let you know. Representative Roper.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Myers says he's comfortable with it, but you know, I'm not sure how from the testimony before, it seemed as if the price would be relatively low if it was based just on the interest rates paid on the original purchase price, if that's the case. But how is the state's interest protected? Does MLNP, because they are a producer, user, do they pay the royalty share to the state of Alaska?
This is Martin Schultz. I'm the audit manager at the Division of Oil and Gas, and I'd like to respond to that through the chair if I could.
Please.
Under House Bill 286, the MLNP or whoever wanted to apply under this statute, this amended statute, would still have to apply to DNR to have its gas valued at the transfer price. And the DNR commissioner would basically review the transfer for price, just like it does now under these kind of applications, and it could decline to use the transfer price to establish the royalty value under the statute. And if you look at the bill, it's on the second page under 180AA2. It lays out the process that the commissioner goes through. But in a nutshell, if the commissioner believed that the price was unreasonably low, DNR would decline to use the transfer price to set royalty value.
Thank you. Thank you, Martin.
I'm not sure you answered my question. Does MLP pay royalty to the state?
Yes, it does. It pays royalties to the state on its share of production at the Beluga River field.
But according to this, they'd be paying it on the transfer price as the percentage royalty benchmark or baseline or something, right?
Right. Basically, what it pays royalty on now, as far as the gas that it consumes internally to, you know, at its utility, at its affiliated utility, the way we value that gas now is based on a contract where Shell sold gas to MLNP, and there was a negotiated third-party contract price. And we have allowed or approved setting a royalty value at that contract price because it was a negotiated third-party contract. So when MLNP bought Shell's interest, we valued the royalty gas at that Shell contract price. That's what we currently do with gas that MLNP uses internally. We do not apply the higher of value currently to that gas.
Representative Roker, this is Mark Myers. I think your question was, does the royalty rate itself vary? And it does not. It's the same as the under the lease contract. It's the only question is here, the actual sales price, because, again, we are taking this gas in value, not in kind. So what is the actual sales proceeds? And, again, we monitor the proceeds from the fields pretty carefully. And if the prices got out of hand or were artificially low, first of all, I don't think the RCA would want that, again, because of their methodology. But if they were artificially low relative to the other sales, the commissioner would reject the sale. Again, if they're within reason and they're stable, we wouldn't go after the higher of value necessarily if you had a prevailing value in that area that was slightly higher than that price. But it's certainly if they got out of whack significantly, we would come back and say, no, the RCA didn't make a reasoned decision. The state's royalty interest is protected. Again, the goal here is to treat them just like we do every other utility. The whole problem, potential problem, was they were not an arm's length transaction, so there could be potential for an affiliated shipper to artificially sell at lower prices. Again, the RCA doesn't have that policy either, and we would be monitoring it. Again, it's just to provide them a long-term stable price because, again, they're in a regulated price mechanism.
Follow-up? Yes.
It seems the way the bill's structured, though, you could have a... if you use the Shell price benchmark, that's expiring, but under this, the transfer price, you could actually have a lower price being paid now than you did even under that contract. Is that possible?
I mean, in that event, that would be grounds for, I mean, if, in other words, if the transfer price did not represent some kind of a fair value for the gas,
right.
Say based on an analysis of what other producers were getting for their sales from the Beluga River unit or other indicators of value, then it, you know, it would be possible that the DNR commissioner would decline to use the transfer price, or that conditions would be put on the transfer price so that if it varied significantly from market value in the future, that it would not be used from that point forward.
So anytime there's a change, Mr. Chairman, through the chair, anytime there's a change in price, you'd have the right to review, the commissioner make a finding and have to either agree with it and then perhaps request the RCA look at it, or they automatically look at it?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe under this bill it goes back to the RCA. It's just the commissioner's determination. And then under the royalty contract, they would be obligated to pay the differential. The RCA wouldn't necessarily make that ruling. I guess they would have to go in retrospect once we, if we had a higher royalty and MMPL's rate base was based on a higher gas sales price, they would probably have to go back to the RCA to get a rate increase potentially.
What subsection 1B, the transfer price between lessee and the utilities established by order of the RCA? I'm just reading statute here, so. Does that apply to a different set of circumstances, or?
RCA is online next also.
Representative Roper, that's the default. And then if DNR doesn't believe that price is justifiable, it's artificially too low, then the commissioner can decline to use the transfer price. And then there are criteria under AS 38-180AA2 that fall into place if the price is unreasonably low. So there is a mechanism currently that he can use to charge a different royalty rate in terms of the value or get more back in value. So I guess then, but that could may call a cascading effect where they would have the MP&L might have to go back in order to cover their costs that they didn't anticipate, they weren't billing the rate payers for, and get a rate increase. I'm not sure, but that's a better question for the RCA. What happened to the utility in that case?
I was going to mention that we do have Kate Gerard, Chair of the Regulatory Commission, that could address that as well. Shall we go to her? Mark, is that it with your comments? Shall we move on?
Yeah. That would be fine, Mr. Chairman.
I spoke a little bit too soon. We have a question from Representative Curtula.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Actually, mine's a question of statutory construction, because it looks like, walk me through what the last section of the bill, well, it's not the last section. Here's a problem. On page 2, on line 13 and 14, you've got an and then under subsection 2 there, you've got an unless. And it looks to me like that's confusing, because it looks to me like what you're trying to say in the first section is that how you can do the transfer and take the transfer price, and then in the next section, you're talking about how you turn the transfer price down. Am I wrong, Mark?
This is Martin Schultz again, through the chair to Representative Curtula. The way the bill is currently structured, and it stays this way with the amendments proposed by House Bill 286, is that basically the producer makes an application to DNR. If you read the very start of 180AA, it says within 90 days after the written request of a lessee. So in other words, the producer makes an application to DNR for this so-called 180AA treatment. And it gets to use its contract price, or in this case, its transfer price under the amendment, unless the commissioner in 2 makes a written finding declining to use that price, basically. So it has to apply to DNR. DNR has 90 days to make a decision on whether to use the contract price or the transfer price. If presumably the way the bill is structured, if DNR didn't issue any finding, then the contract price or transfer price would be used.
Yeah, through the chair, I see what it is you're trying to do, but when you add in the or at the end of the line of line 9, I think your grammar gets mixed up. It may be kind of technical, but it's a little confusing. So maybe we can take the rest of the testimony. I'm going to think about it. I see what you're trying to do, though, and thanks for clarifying that. I'm just not sure the language actually does it quite right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll move to Kate Gerard of the Regulatory Commission. Kate?
Just one second, please, Mr. Chairman. There we go. Mr. Chairman?
Yes, we hear you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I actually have no testimony other than to say that we have read the legislation and we are comfortable with it. I do have some answers to the questions that have been bantered around recently. Happy to provide what I think would be a little clarity, if you like.
Why don't you go ahead and do that?
Okay. We issued, the RCA issued order number U9636, and which discusses and clarifies for the members the method of calculating the transfer price that is discussed in this legislation. And annually, from this point forward, MLMP will file with us a calculation of their transfer price, and it's based on their actual production costs times their debt service ratio. So they'll take their costs, and for purposes of illustration, let's just pretend it's $1 million. Then they'll multiply that $1 million times their debt service coverage rate, which is 1.6. So we then will calculate from that. We'll have their actual production costs, and we'll have their debt service coverage that we set. And we'll calculate, or we'll review their proposed calculations to us of the of the transfer price. So to answer the questions that Representative Roekberg, I believe, was answering, the calculation will be fully analyzed and vetted here within the commission. Frequently, when MLMP proposes or brings forward a tariff, which they'll do every single year now, we've ordered them to do that, there's an opportunity for the public advocate, which is an arm of the Attorney General, to participate in the evaluation of that calculation. And so there is, through this process of coming to the RCA, a mechanism for the public to weigh in, and obviously the advocate be looking at those costs, making sure that they're not too low or too high. as well as have an opportunity to opine on whether the advocate believes they're fair and reasonable. So all of that is brought before us, and we take it into consideration when we make a calculation. And I appreciate that the Department of Natural Resources probably wanted to put a fail-safe, they had an opportunity to reject or approve, but I believe truly that it would be a very rare event where we would fully vet a calculation of this nature and then that it would have a problem with it.
Thank you, Kate.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. Any other folks online that wish to testify on House Bill 286? Anybody in Juneau that wish to testify on House Bill 286? Okay. I will, with that, close the public hearing, and we'll take this up for consideration of the committee. Is there any further discussion on this bill before we move it out of committee, or would there perhaps be a motion to do so?
Chairman.
Yes, Representative Roper.
I move House Bill 286 with individual recommendation and attach zero fiscal note or notes as appropriate.
Any objections to the motion as stated? Seeing none, House Bill 286 moves out of committee. Before we adjourn this meeting, I wanted to note that this is likely our last committee of the session unless something unforeseen occurs and we need to call another meeting. If we get new legs underneath my interest rate bill or something else that we feel we need to address as a committee. So this is likely it until next January. There is a sheet that we handed out that shows the possible trips. This is something we talked about early in the session that are possibilities for the Oil and Gas Committee. Obviously, the Energy Council is done for the session. However, we do have ongoing meetings throughout the year. The next one is going to be in, I think it's St. John's, Newfoundland in northeast Canada on the coast there. That's going to be in June with the Energy Council. That's available for members of the committee subject to authorization by the Speaker, of course. And then we've got other trips. Sakhalin Island is a potential private trip that could be facilitated. Any of these, if anybody has any information, just contact my office and we'd be happy to provide further specifics for you. But also the tanker ride from Valdez to the West Coast, I'm going to be going on that myself next month. That's available for us also. Cook Inlet oil platforms, the Valdez Pipeline Terminal. Jerry Mack, you could arrange that for us if need be. And then it was suggested that perhaps the shipyards would be of interest to oil and gas members to look at the facilities that construct the oil tankers, one of which we were on, of course, just last week. So I just wanted to, as an FYI, provide that for the committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Roper.
There is an Energy Council quarterly meeting in New Orleans at the end of September.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
FYI.
Thank you very much. Okay, is there any other business to be brought forth to the committee before we adjourn? Seeing none, we'll adjourn this meeting of the Oil and Gas Committee at 6:20 p.m. Thank you very much.